You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Rob, how you doing, buddy? You doing all right?
I'm doing great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You weren't around last week. I did the
Well, to be fair, you changed your mind like the night we were releasing it and decided to record something.
Yeah.
And there was no opportunity.
It's the first one I did without you. I felt a little naked.
Yeah. Well, it's because you live so far. You've got your mansion up on Hollywood Hills.
So far away. Rob, first of all, I was thinking about, I did Dax's live podcast in front of 3,000 people, and I thought it went so well that I think we should do a live podcast. And, I like to ask everybody out there, our listeners, if we come to your city, would you damn well support us and come show up for a live podcast? I think we should try it.
We need at least 10,000 people in each city.
No, we don't. Here's the reality. If 40 people show up, I don't give a shit. It's fun. We do it, and we keep building an audience. Yeah, let us know. Tweet us, Instagram us. Subscribe. I say this every week. Subscribe. If you like this, say it. Tell your friends. Get us more listeners. We're very appreciative of that.
Who do we got this week, Michael?
Well, first of all, I want to tell everybody that I'm going to be in Dallas on May 3rd, Orlando May 17th, Denver May 31st. And then Australia in mid-June for conventions.
So what you're saying is make sure you avoid those cities, because yes, Michael will be in town. And if people want to know, I'm going to be in Denver.
No, you won't.
Denver,
Tom Welling
Denver
and I will be at
April.
These conventions. I'll kill you. Anyway, our guest today is one of my favorites, dude. I don't know if you've seen this movie. It doesn't matter. This guy calls himself. I have a book right here. Look at this. If Chins Could Kill. The Bruce Campbell book, Confessions of a B-Movie Actor. This guy is so funny. He was stoned on the podcast. He was in Ash versus the Evil Dead, Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, Briscoe County Jr. He's been in every Sam Raimi movie. He's a fantastic, dynamic personality and a great story, how his career started and how he's continued to work. He's just a glorious human being. So enjoy this one, folks. Inside of You is brought to you by Fat Scooters. I have two Fat Scooters. That's P-H-A-T. Every time, Rob, I go out and I'm driving these things, people stop me. Dude, where did you get? That is the coolest thing ever. I swear to God, people stop me all over. I got to have a Fat Scooter. If you want to check me riding a Fat Scooter, go on Instagram. There's a couple of videos on there. I have a blast with these things. They're electric scooters built for adventure. They're stable. They're powerful. They're not these little rinky-dink crappy. It's ridiculously fun. And you can customize these things. Pink colors. I mean, I like pink, but accessories. Like, they have these Bluetooth power, speakers. You have an iPhone holder. I've got everything on this thing. They customize the deck, where you put your feet.
Like a skateboard?
Mine says inside of you. Yeah, like a skateboard. Dude, I have a fatty, and it's just awesome. You could customize all this stuff. There's a lot of scooters out there, but nothing like Fat Scooters. It's such a smooth ride, unlike those little rental scooters like I talked about, Rob.
And you can get special financing, so you don't have to pay for all of it up front.
Yeah, and they go up to 50 miles an hour on a single charge. They have beach mode, golf mode. If you're like a golfer, instead of buying a big cart, they have these things on the kickstand that you can put it on the grass.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Visit fatscooters.com and join the electric scooter revolution now. That's phatscooters.com.
Check them out at fatscooters.com. They're my buddies, and build your custom Fat Scooter. That's phatscooters.com. Check them out. Let's get inside Bruce Campbell.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Are you comfortable?
Yeah, not bad.
Are we rolling?
I'm Buddhist style.
Yep. We're rolling. You're Buddhist style?
Yeah.
You can move that mic wherever you want.
Why did you decide to do a podcast?
Career wasn't going anywhere.
And you're a guy who likes to talk.
No, you know what? I'll tell you what happened. Is this guy right here, Rob, he's my producer. He's very bright. He's 28. He's
Hello,
got a kid.
Rob.
He's married.
Hello.
And I was doing stand-up comedy. And I had started stand-up, and he was taking pictures.
He goes, you got a face for radio,
yeah,
kid.
Yeah, he said that. He actually just didn't say anything. I approached him, and I said, hey, pal.
Why did you approach him? Who was he?
I said, I'd love to get a picture, because you're taking pictures of all the performers here. You with me here? I'm telling the story.
He's telling the story, right? He's taking pictures.
He's taking pictures. And I go, I want, if this is the last time I do stand-up, which I only had gone on stage like two or three times, I want pictures to say approved.
I thought you did a lot of stand-up.
Well, I did last year, but when I met him, it was the very beginning of the stand-up, you see.
Yeah,
so you went from
show,
taking
right?
pictures of random comedians to producing this podcast.
Rob,
is that how fast your ascent was?
No, he was like taking pictures of like big bands like Radiohead and doing a lot of things. So I guess it sounds like he was demoted if he's taking pictures of me. I know where your mind goes, Bruce.
Got it.
Bruce Campbell, thanks for allowing me to be inside of you this evening.
Yeah, I feel like you're getting into me.
Already?
You're getting into me.
Oh, we haven't scratched the surface.
You're getting to me.
Getting in.
I know that.
I don't know. That's good. Anyway, so look, long story boring. This guy took some pictures. I wanted a picture. Next thing you know, he goes, you should have a website. And I go, I don't need a website. He goes, no, you need a website. He's a good seller.
He said, what do you know? You take pictures.
Right. So I paid him a lot of money to do a website. I liked it. Anyway, then he says, you should do a podcast.
It grew from that.
And it grew into a podcast. I go, I don't know. But yeah, I've always wanted to do one. Everyone's doing one. So next thing you know, we're doing it. And it's I'm having fun doing it. It's easy.
And actors love to spew all the bullshit about their miserable lives.
Well,
right?
This is therapy for me. And
push a button for an actor, right? I mean, for an actor to come on a show with in an actor-friendly zone, oh, my God, you must tell him to shut up after a while. Okay, thanks a lot for coming on our show.
Yes.
Cue the music.
No. I you know what's funny is I say this every episode, it becomes therapy for me, Bruce.
Why?
Because I need
therapy.
You can
find out that other people have miserable experiences.
Yes. I like to know that other people are fucked up, too.
You know what's awesome?
What?
Read books about actors.
I do. I read your first book, and then the second new one is what?
Further Confessions of a B-movie actor.
Of a B-movie actor.
And 15 years from now will be the final Confessions. It's
really?
Going to be a trilogy.
Really?
Yep. Me and Star Wars, we do trilogies.
Well, you know what's funny is I was just talking to my buddy Troy, who's like does extra work in Vancouver, and he said he came up to you at a convention, and he said, that book really changed my life. And you go, why? Why did it change? He goes, because I listened to you about make your own movies, do your own thing. You know, when you and
sure.
Sam Raimi were out in the middle of nowhere, you weren't anywhere near Hollywood.
You learn from reading these books. It's not, okay, yeah, I'm randomly interested in, let's say, Sammy Davis Jr.'s career. So I'll read it, but there's a lot of takeaways from these books that
right.
are great.
I already bought the fucking thing, Bruce.
No,
I think it's amazing.
No, but here's the thing. I don't care if people buy my book. I'm going to continue to buy actors' books because I keep learning. Sammy Davis Jr.,
ooh.
He writes a book.
Right.
Stop the World, I Want to Get Off, whatever the name of that book was.
Right.
So he writes it, very successful, and he goes, I've got more stuff to say. But he was too busy. He was booked. I was working. And he's like, I'm never going to write another book unless I get someone to help me write this book. So he found a married couple that were huge fans of his.
Were they writers?
Yeah.
Okay.
And knew everything about him. And he would go to them and go, I want to talk a little more about this, about that, you know? And they would write it. And then they would submit it to him and he'd just make notes. Because he said, if I do it that way, no, I'm not writing every single little tiny word. But the book is still coming out. So it's either no book or I get help. And he goes, I'd rather have another book because there's shit that I want to say. So I had this book floating around. I'm like, am I ever going to get to this, to writing a sequel to that first book, First Chance book? And I went, I'm going to learn from Sammy Davis Jr. I'm going
to get somebody else to help
you. A page right out of his book. I've got a Rob, Craig Sanborn. He's been with me now for 20 years. He does anywhere from graphics, websites. He does every internet, all social media graphics and shit like that. He can kind of do anything. So I said to him, how about this? Let me come up to Portland where he lives. And I love Portland. It's like twist my arm to go to Portland.
Right.
We're going to sit for a week and we're going to get a digital recorder. And I'm going to tell you every story in that book. And then you're going to ask questions like a cub reporter. And we'll get the story out just by conversation. So he took that. He took a week of ramblings. He transcribed the whole thing.
How long did it take him?
Oh,
Months.
Months.
Yeah.
And, then he would do the first pass on chapters, and then I would take it and go, that's not how I would do it. I would do it this way. And I could mercilessly edit, because editing is easy.
Did he hate you for a while?
It doesn't matter. That was the deal that we made.
That was the job.
Is that you're like a co-writer,
right.
And your job is to bash this into shape,
right.
And then I'm gonna polish that turd at the very end.
Right.
So that's how we did it. And I'm like, well, It's not every single word, but it's actually close because the last pass, I could just make it how I would do it.
How many pages is the new book?
I don't know, three something. You always got to get a certain page count.
What does a guy get paid to help you write a book? What percentage? Because Rob gets 20% of whatever this podcast
makes. I'm throwing him 10 for a limited amount.
10%?
Yeah.
10% of what it makes.
I'm the studio.
After cost. You're the studio.
So guess what? I've had to give him accounting that says, here's how much I paid you for these 3 years to prep this book. So I got to get that back first.
Right.
And I just did a tour where it's all out of my pocket for a show. I got to get that back first.
Right.
I just did the audiobook. I paid for it. So we now have a number that has to be recouped before he gets anything.
Really?
But I fully expect him to get some dough.
Do you think
we got the number eight, baby?
Do you think number eight on the New York Times bestseller?
Thank you.
That's amazing.
Not bad.
They are good. You know, the one book I read, I'm sure the second one, it's just a continuation. It's the Sammy Davis Jr. of books.
It is.
It is. So I get it. If this half as good as the first one, I mean, it's a great read.
Writing books is really cool, though. There's no chefs. You make a movie?
Yeah.
Oh, baby. Lots of people with opinions.
I wonder sometimes, you've done so much work, but I could tell there's sort of like, I wouldn't say animosity. I would say animosity.
These are your words, sir.
But I would say that there's something about you that you love certain aspects and you hate. Tell me what you love about the business and then what you hate.
What I love about the business is I'm not digging ditches.
Of course.
I'm playing guys who dig ditches.
Sure.
I play soldiers, but I don't get shot at. I like make-believe. You know how if sports, because you're a big sports lover, I find it amazing that like in Olympics, I've seen a couple of the Olympic amazing events, and you go, that's when the height of physicality equals spiritual. Sports can become metaphysical. They can take you to the next realm, and you'll go, that guy made that shot because something else was powering him. He was using the force. Right. You know, Jordan had to have the force in him for some of those shots.
Right, godlike.
Game win, yeah. Transcendent. But he's still doing something that's just physical. What I like about our business, for all the foibles, all the tedium, all the letdowns.
Good words, tedium.
All the hassle. All the repetition is sometimes during that take. After a take, I'll go, that was spiritual.
Give me an example of a time that comes right to mind that you go, wow, I went spiritual. Was it like Bubba Hotep?
No, the last season of Ash versus Evil Dead.
Really?
The character Ash gets to the end of his rope because he's just human. He's not a superhero. He has no super spy skills. He's not from another planet, doesn't have a spandex suit.
He's lucky.
He can't fly. He's not even lucky. He's an idiot. Guy can't even shoot a gun. We have a scene where he wants out. He's like, fuck this. This wasn't my plan. He's basically explaining he's like going broke being a hero. You know, I don't even have a job. So we did a couple of takes, and I just asked the director I just said, give me one more because we're kind of getting up.
Why did you want one more?
Because I knew we were getting up to speed.
You were feeling you had something left in the tank.
Keep rolling, yeah. But no, we're not there yet. We're not there yet. And so we did the one other take, and by the end of it, we were both laughing because we were like, that's it. That's the one. And they'll keep whatever they keep of it, but me and the director both knew that it was worth doing. And sometimes an actor will ask for another take, and you go, like, as a director, I've had that. I directed a VIP episode with Pamela Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
I directed two of those.
Fuck, you did it.
That looks great on a resume, man. VIP. You can get the big shows after that. But there was another actor. There was an actor on that show who was actually a perfectly good actor. He did a really good, solid take. The camera shit was perfect. Everything was perfect. He goes, man, I got to have one more. I said, it's not going to be better. I'm an actor. I'm telling you right now.
Yeah.
What did you think you would want to do differently? He goes, no, I got, you know, more in the tank, that sort of thing. And I went, I'm telling you objectively, you don't need to do it. You really want to? We'll roll, but you'll be halfway through the take and you're going to stop and look at me and go, yeah, you're right. So we did another take.
Were you
we
right?
We did another full take. I was completely fucking right.
Oh, because you jinxed it. You shouldn't have said anything.
Well, he shouldn't have messed with what was good. So, and
that's
plus,
true.
I'm the director. We still use the other take
see,
anyway.
When we... That's true.
He ain't in the editing
You have some
room.
Clout with VIP.
Well, oh boy.
But you know, wait a minute. You said, I thought you were going to say when you're talking about Jordan and it's that spiritual, metaphysical
yeah.
thing. But I thought you were going to say, I had this take where I forgot who Bruce Campbell was. I was
no,
ash.
You do.
It was out of body.
Right. No, you don't see the camera anymore.
That's a rare thing that does happen.
It does happen.
Yeah, I've had it.
I think it happens in a comedy scenario. Look, you know from clubs, you get an audience going and you're riding a wave. You are.
Absolutely.
You're speedballing.
Yeah.
That's why you stay in entertainment. You're being dragged down by the weight of your performance, but you're buoyed by the response. So you're speedballing.
Have you ever speedballed?
I haven't. I don't like to be pulled in two different directions.
Are you a control freak?
No, not really.
Do you drink? You drink.
I drink alcohol.
But you've never done drugs.
I do. I smoke marijuana.
Yes, I smoked with you.
But that's not really a drug.
It's not.
It's the only medicine in my cabinet. Most fuckers my age have four. They got four prescriptions. They got
your age. I'm younger than you, and I have all this shit in my fucking thing.
They got boner pills.
I don't know. Guys my age. Yeah, maybe.
Boner pills. They got usually a weird. Everyone's got this some cholesterol shit.
Nope, don't have that.
You got a little problems in your life. Well, better get crack open that Xanax.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
Oh my God.
Are you telling me to start smoking more pot?
I think, you know, you got to do what you got to do. What's so awesome is my little crappy, any crappy town now. I went fishing last year. We cut up the Oregon coast, which is unbelievably gorgeous. Through every crappy town, there was a Green Cross sign. I'm like, well.
Did you smoke in every town?
Well, I bought in every town because I want to go see what is that Coos Bay dispensary? What does it look like? And who's running it? And what are they like? And what's awesome about pot shops, liquor stores are still a little bit like porn. Not a lot of eye contact. I'm just going to get my bottle and shove it in a bag, and I'm just going to go to my truck and go home and drink my goddamn bourbon. I don't really want to talk too much about it. So they get in there and go into a pot shop. Hey, what's going on, man? And you go, what do you got today? What's cool? Oh, we just got this great stuff. And they describe it like wine. Oh, it's got this great grassy beginning and a nice vanilla finish.
It's a passion. It's a real passion.
It is, and they're experts. So every state is weird how they treat you. Some states treat you like a child in some areas, and some treat you like an adult. Like in Oregon, they treat you like a child with alcohol. You've got to go to a state liquor store, and it says liquor store. You don't go to the local party store and get it. You can't get it at a supermarket either. You can get beer and wine.
Right.
So Oregon treats you like a child. You must be regulated with your alcohol consumption, but buy all the weed you want.
Right.
California now just finally went, of course, you know, recreational, but you can buy liquor at you know, sewing shops in California. They don't care. So it's funny what states care about.
Yeah, let me ask you. Do you remember how we met?
A convention?
No. I think we did a pilot together.
Oh, well, of course. That's how we cemented our relationship.
We did, and I remember...
Mission Control.
Mission Control didn't happen. You know, it was sad because I got fired from the... Well, I wouldn't say fired. What would you call it?
Reshot.
No, they didn't reshoot me.
Oh, they never reshot? They never even got around to
no,
it?
No, they let me go. They picked it up for five because they were going to change the character, and then they never picked it up.
Right.
And I remember you were really kind. Ah, don't worry about it. I wasn't too worried.
TV is, come on, man. That's you're throwing shit up on the wall all the time. I've learned a while ago, can't take it that seriously. I told someone this the other day. I'm flying in Rupert Murdoch's jet.
Jesus.
It's a James Bond jet. It's gold plated, you know? Because I'm doing The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr.
That's right.
And I'm going to go with a bunch of actors from other Fox shows to Monroe, Louisiana, and meet Terry Bradshaw down there, and we're gonna get this former CBS affiliate that switched to Fox, and we're gonna throw a party for them and make a big deal of these networks that are switching to Fox. So Rupert wanted all of these people from shows. So I flew down there as a cowboy in the dumb outfit and everything, put on a show, big celebration. They canceled our show 3 days later.
Are you serious?
Yeah, so you can't. How can, if I got personally offended by that, I would go, Those guys are assholes for doing that when they knew. The thing is, they didn't even know.
No.
You know, these guys are in hotel rooms with magnetic boards going, CBS, oh, my God, they got Dr. Giggles is on at 10. Oh, then let's put Mercy Me across from it at, you know, whatever.
That's what it is. And it's all, you know, it's they hire these marketing guys who don't even know anything.
They're tap dancing other than, as fast as right. they can.
But you took me, you said, we're going for a bike ride.
Let's go.
And we went to a bike ride, and I borrowed one of your bikes. I didn't even have a bike at the time. I went to your house. You were getting ready. I met your son. And then you took me for a bike ride. Where did you take me? The reservoir?
I think it was the Sepulveda Basin.
Sepulveda Basin, and we smoked some grass.
Yeah, man.
Throughout the whole day.
Yeah, so?
I'd never had ridden a bike while stoned.
Oh, that's the best.
It was interesting.
Oh, you're Floaty McGee.
I liked
on
it.
On a bicycle.
I was Floaty McGee.
And we ended, that's the music you hear after that.
We ended up on the 18th hole of a golf course without golfing, and we took a shot of tequila to end our day.
Yeah, at the crappy clubhouse.
At the crappy clubhouse.
Nailed it.
And it was awesome.
I do the same thing in Oregon.
You still do all those
things? It's the Bear Park Green Belt Greenway, and it runs for 20 miles. It parallels the 5 freeway. It's a dedicated bike path.
And how often do you do it?
Oh, whenever I can. I'm just gone. I just disappear. See you. Riding to Medford today on my electric bike.
Oh, you know, electric. See, you got lazy on me. Before, we were really pedaling. The cardio was going up.
Oh, yeah.
What happened?
But an electric bike changes your life. Because you go, I'm going to ride 20 miles to Medford because I can. Because we have this one path, the Bear Creek Parkway. It goes downhill because it's following a river. And all rivers flow away from mountains. So you're going downhill in one direction. But then I got to get all the way back. I'm like, screw that.
I'm tired.
I already did the pedaling.
And I'm too stoned.
But the bike now that I get the good kind is pedal assist. Because then you're still part of the program. The bike will not do it for you.
I thought the pot was called Pedal Assist.
That's a pretty good name.
Right? Pedal Assist.
I'm still trying to brand Screaming Brain, though.
Screaming Brain for an Oregon weed.
Screaming Brain. But, yeah, bicycles are good. Electric bikes are good.
Have you ever been stoned on set on a movie?
Pretty rarely. I'm 2% old school about that, of getting liquored up while I work or smoking reefer.
Can you recall a moment where you said, I got this scene, I know it in the back of my head, I'm going to get stoned, and it didn't go well? I'm only asking this because
The very first time I shot stoned, the first Evil Dead, we went down there in 1979, Sam was 20, I'm 21, I had never smoked.
You're still in college.
Well, we didn't go to college, but...
You didn't go to college.
But we were college age.
Right.
I had never smoked it before. So here we are in Tennessee, rural Tennessee. We knew they had it. So our local guy, Gary Holt, he was our local contact, Gary Holt.
You need some Mary J.
We said, hey, man, where's that good Tennessee shit, man? So he goes, okay, I'll get you some. And he got us moonshine, too. But so we thought we had a scene in the movie where we're sitting around a camp, this fire, listening to a scary tape recorder and passing a joint around. So we had all heard the story of Easy Rider, Jack Nicholson, smoked supposedly like 50 joints in the course of this one scene around a campfire, all real weed, because they wanted Jack to give the crazy performance, which, of course, he got, you know, nominated for an Academy fucking
Award.
Did
he have lines during that scene?
I think he made them all up, but, you know. So we thought, let's do the same thing. Maybe we'll get some good improv. Yeah. We'll smoke some real weed. And so... they rolled it up. I'd never done it before. We get halfway through the scene.
What scene are you shooting?
We're shooting a scene of sitting around a tape recorder, playing it back while there's
Domacross, double up, all that.
Yeah. And a storm is going outside, and it was the release of the evil demons.
Oh, yeah.
So it's supposed to be creepy and weird, and we're supposed to get creeped out because we're stoned. But halfway through shooting it, I left the planet. Things became six-channel stereo.
Did your heart start racing? Were you nervous?
It wasn't even that. It wasn't the nervous. I became removed from my body, and I hovered about the set, and everything was in six-channel stereo, and I was trying to decipher Sam's voice from all the other voices. I wanted to listen to how he was directing me. And for some reason, I heard everybody else's voice at the same time. So it was a very difficult process. And then, you know, you start – the early days of weed are time jump cuts.
Right.
Like 2 minutes later, you're putting peanut butter on your matzah in the kitchen. And you go, fuck, how did I get here?
I love how you went to matzah.
Matzah, that was our go-to because of Sam.
He's a Jew.
I'm a Jew. Every dinner at Sam's was matzah and, you know, matzah and eggs.
Matzah was something we were forced to eat as children. I don't know why people just had it lying around the house.
I fucking love matzah.
I'll put anything on it.
It's
okay. I like it in my older age, yeah.
Yeah. So the time jump cuts would happen. And so there was a time jump cut, and we were all on the front porch, and I could hear the other crew members going, Sam, we don't think this is working. You know, we think we're wasting the time. Sam's like, yeah, they got too stoned. Yeah, and so I was like, and I felt really bad. I was so stoned, but I went, I can do it. So I think I tried to convince him of like, let me do it.
If you watch that scene, is it? Were you
there's 4 seconds of it. There's a wide shot we used 10 feet
because you couldn't
it.
Use much more.
It was useless. I couldn't open my eyes during the scene. I mean, I was a little slit eyes, and I started to lean over to one side. And I was just slowly disappearing out of the shot. They're like, we can't use that. So,
oh my God.
So yeah.
That was it for you.
Yeah.
Didn't do it again.
Not really. No.
Right.
If you focus on your work, it's hard enough.
It is.
I don't need the extra.
You don't need the paranoia.
No. It's so much better to embrace the paranoia. Where you walk into a restaurant and you go, nobody's even looking at me. I'm invisible, as a matter of fact.
Do you do this?
Oh, absolutely. The more stoned I am, the more confident I get that there's absolutely nothing wrong. And I'll make eye contact that normally I wouldn't even make. Because I'm like, if I was stoned, I wouldn't make eye contact. So I'm going to talk to that waitress and I'm going to go, yes, I'd like 2 eggs over easy. And I'd be very clear about what I would like, as though I order it every day. And then when she comes back with it, I go, did I order that? Because I'd forgotten that I ordered that. But, you know, that's okay. It doesn't hurt the brain at all.
Oh, my God. I didn't know where I was. I like that. Embrace the paranoia.
Play through the pain.
Do you think you could today if you got stoned? Do you think you could play through it?
Like if I had to actually work stoned?
Yeah. You smoke enough pot now that I think you could probably do it.
Oh, I could. Easy.
I think you could do it. I don't think I could.
Well, interviews.
You get stoned in interviews.
Oh, there's nothing better.
Is it fun?
Oh.
Are you worried about what you're going to say?
No.
Are you stoned right now, by the way?
A little bit. Before an interview is the perfect time because then what you do is while you're listening to the same question over and over again, I can hear the guy's cat purring on the other end of the line.
Yeah.
And so that becomes the interest of the interview. You go, I'll bet he's got it on his lap. So you start to have a whole separate narrative. So it's not upset about all the time they taking out of my life to promote this show. I'm like, it really poses lots of interesting questions.
Rob, how do you feel about this interview so far with Bruce Campbell?
I feel great.
That's why they have editing.
Inside of You is brought to you by Rocket Money. I love Rocket Money. You know why? Because everyone should have Rocket Money because it just helps you save money. How many times do we have subscriptions that we don't even know we have anymore and we're paying so much money? It's throwing away money, Ryan.
I found one.
You did it. You told me. I got Rocket Money.
Okay, I found one. I'm embarrassed to say how long it's been going on, but thank you for finding it. My God. It was embarrassing.
Yeah, because it's like you want to watch some show and you go, oh, I have to subscribe to this streaming whatever. Mm-hmm. And you start streaming the show, you watch it, you leave, and you forget after this trial period it kicks in and it's they're charging terrible. You $10 a month. It is embarrassing.
Ugh.
You know, 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about. Before I started using Rocket Money, I thought I had, you know, like, oh, I have like 5 subscriptions. I could not believe it when they showed me I was paying for like 4 extra between, you know, streaming devices and fitness apps, delivery services. It's never ending. And thanks to Rocket Money, I'm no longer wasting money on the ones I forgot about. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features.
Rocket Money will even try to negotiate lowering your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with the customer service for you. And I like that.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/inside. That's rocketmoney.com/inside. rocketmoney.com/inside. Inside of You is brought to you by Factor. Factor Meals has changed my life. I am not spending tons of money ordering delivery service all the time anymore. I get delicious meals that are customized to my liking. I can make them in just 2 minutes. I have a menu of over 35 options delivered to my door. Calorie smart, keto, protein plus, vegan, veggie, you choose. Discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feeling good all day long. And these meals are delicious. I've had their chicken. I've had their chili. I have had their burgers. This is delicious. You're going to save money and no more stress going to the grocery store, Ryan. You don't want to go to the grocery store all the time when you can have your meals delivered right there for you.
Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring.
Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. You simply heat and savor the good stuff.
Tailored to your schedule, customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
Head to factormeals.com/inside50 and use code INSIDE50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code INSIDE50 at factormeals.com/inside50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Bruce, what was it like being Bruce Campbell as a child? Were you always kind of funny, sarcastic, up to no good?
I never really got in any serious trouble. It was pretty industrious is what it was. We were industrious little shits. Came from suburban Detroit. Most of the people we knew at some point worked for the Ford, you know, Ford, Chevy, Chrysler. You worked for one of the Ford families. My buddy, his father was a Ford engineer. My dad was a ad man, and their client was Chevrolet. So we owned Chevys because that's what you were, brand loyal. I think we understood the concept of working and building things. So we built multiple tree forts that were industrious. We had my brother is 6 years older, and I have my other brother is 1 year older. So I was the youngest of three. So we could use their know-how and my oldest brother's ability to like actually build stuff and like saw shit. So we built a tank in our backyard, almost a full-scale tank.
Made out of what?
Made out of plywood that we stole from all the houses that were being developed in our neighborhood. And this is before motion detectors. The big bad dogs when I was a kid was a German Shepherd, Shadow. There was one bad dog in the whole neighborhood, and there's no leashes. And so they would always attack this other dog, Frisky. But, you know, life was simple. It was freewheeling. You could cut through everybody's yard. And then I'll wave at you out the back.
That's what we did. We used to cut through yards.
Cut right through yards.
Drink out of garden hoses.
Oh, yeah, why not? But you got to let them run because otherwise, if they've been sitting in the sun, they're all rubbery and hot. But the Lawrences had a trampoline. We would stop and bounce on somebody else's trampoline, and they would wave out the window and let us do it. And the idea of bouncing on the trampoline at that time was to hurt the guy that you were bouncing with.
We wanted him to get off the
tramp. You bounce them off the tramp. Right. Otherwise, you didn't win.
Right, right.
We were breaking springs, and we'd come back. We'd show them we bought a new spring. Wave it to them through the window. And there was no liability issues. They're swimming in other people's pools.
Did your parents, were they very supportive of you? Did they let you just do what you want?
Yeah, we were free-range, totally free-range kids. We had a bell. My mom, we literally had a belfry and a bell at the end of our ranch house that was on top of the garage. And she's like, that's your distance. You must be able to hear the bell. Because I'm going to ring the bell when it's time to
come
home.
And you better be home.
You better be coming home.
Did you ever not? I didn't hear the bell, Mom.
No, no, no. You couldn't pull that. Because then you lost your freedom. The only way to maintain your freedom was to be diligent about that. Because then she went, I trust you. If your mother stops trusting you, you're fucked. Even if you're doing, if you're doing not bad stuff, if you're unreliable because they want to know that their kid will not die randomly because they're stupid. They want to know that you develop some responsibility. So we'd be playing softball, and it would be sort of a challenge of who could hear it because, you know, my older brother Don is 1 year older. We competed in everything. We're like, that's the bell. No, it isn't. Yeah, it is. Listen. Yeah, it is. Take off on our bikes, and we'd race home. But there were no restrictions. That was our one perimeter.
Were you a jokester? Were you guy the one that was always funny? Like Bruce is going to say something funny. Here he goes. Or were you serious?
It was a slow development. I was not serious.
Really? It was a slow development.
It was a slow
because
development.
Because I watch you as, what year did you do Evil Dead?
1979.
And how old were you?
21.
21. Mm-hmm. And I specifically remember saying this. Like Jim Carrey, you were doing the shit he was doing before Jim Carrey. Like in Evil Dead, the physical comedy and the chops and the good look. I just remember saying this guy is a genius.
Well, the half of the reason we're going back to do Ash versus Evil Dead is so I can fix Ash now that I have experience. I'm best known for the role where I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I'm playing Ash. I'm 21. How do you be an actor? Do you try and create a persona?
You didn't know how to be an actor. You'd never done anything.
Oh, I did local community theater in a bunch of Super 8 movies, but that's it. I mean, none of us had any real experience.
So what were you doing in high school?
Doing plays.
So you were doing plays?
Plays in Super 8 movies.
Okay, so you were an actor.
Yeah, I was an actor.
Right, but you hadn't had any.
But this was a feature film. I'm like, well, I got to do this differently now. This is a motion picture.
Were you nervous? Did you feel the nerves?
No, but you can watch as the movie goes, everybody gets better. Because we shot almost in sequence. In the beginning, it's very stiff. Hey, Linda, here's a necklace I made for you. How about that? It was bad actors, inexperienced actors saying bad dialogue is really what it was.
Do you remember thinking this is it? This is like, this is never.
No, we were not. We were just concerned. We did horror because we didn't want to lose investors' money. We had all our stuff was slapstick before. Sam Raimi loved the Marx Brothers. Another guy that we wrote with, Scott Spiegel, he was a huge Three Stooges fan. We called Larry at the old folks' home. Larry Fine from the Three Stooges. We talked to him in like 1974.
Wow.
We called him. We had to figure out the time difference from Michigan to California. And his nurse was Mrs. Ross. You'd call about 11 in the morning, which was like 1 o'clock, you know, 2 for us. Mrs. Ross, can we talk to Larry?
No way.
Hold on, I'll check and see. Hello. Help us to find. Hello. So,
come on. Are you serious?
Baby. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, Larry Fine.
Did you ever visit him or see him or meet him or just the phone?
No, just on the phone, which was impressive enough. So our influence was always comedy, but we felt very obliged if we raised money from like guys, hard cash from a hardcore businessman. You better have a plan. So we thought, let's do horror. You can have nobody.
Can't lose with that.
Look at all the classic horror movies of the 70s. Halloween, Jamie Lee Curtis, she was nobody.
Right.
She was nobody.
A lot of those movies she did.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Gunnar Hansen, nobody.
To this day, I don't understand. When I see a trailer for a horror movie, I think you don't need anyone.
Anything.
You just have a good story with good actors and you got it.
They
always need stars. You know, always need stars.
Oh, Hostel. You know, you just put a guy's dick in a vise for an hour. You're done. It's two guys.
Rob,
it's a guy in a vise. That's all you need.
It's true.
But so that's what sort of left us into sort of taking a weird detour into horror. So much later in the game, we would inject the horror back, the comedy back into it. Evil Dead 1 is a melodrama. And it's we can't bury, we got to bury Shelley. We can't bury Shelley. She's a friend of ours. I mean, just inane conversations.
Yes.
But played straight. Everyone talks about how campy it is. It ain't campy. It's campy because we're failing quite often.
That's, you know, for you to be able to divulge you could have easily played into it. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
No, we knew it was campy. Oh, sure. No, we did not. We
so tried you were offended by this.
I was not offended, but if they like it, they like it. Then I don't give a shit. But what saved the movie was a lot of Sam Raimi's wacky visuals. And he really was ahead of the curve. The movie doesn't really look like other horror movies visually.
How did you know that he was that good?
Sam was right from the start. He was weirdo number one.
What year was this?
Junior high school. I saw him the first time. West Maple Junior High School. I'm walking down the hallway. There's this guy dressed like Sherlock Holmes. sitting on the floor in the middle of the fucking hallway playing with dolls. I was like, all right, let's go around that guy. It turned out to be Sam Raimi. And I busted him on it later. He goes, I go, you were that guy playing with dolls in the middle of the hallway, weren't you? I was making a movie. I'm like, there were no cameras around. You were just being a fucking weirdo dressed like Sherlock Holmes.
So why did you
with the magnifying glass. Oh, how very interesting. He'd walk up to people and like shove it in their face. So I avoided him. I avoided him. Didn't see him again until 11th grade. I'm taking typing class. And I'm like, how the fuck does anybody wind up on typing class? Who winds up in these classes?
I took one.
I didn't pick typing. They assigned it to me randomly. I'm like, and I'd never gone to counselors before. I didn't even know. I was very straight-laced. I didn't even know that you could, like, drop classes. I thought you take the classes they give you and shove it. It's school. It's not supposed to be fun.
Right.
I went to the counselor. I went, because I sat in that typing going, oh, my God. I looked around. Everyone knew how to type. I'm like, how do they know how to type? Isn't that why you take the class? I felt like the loser number one. Peck, 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 peck. Counselor goes, yeah, you can drop the class. I'm like, oh, my God. What do you got? I got I got radio speech. I went, radio speech? Wait, stop
right
there.
What the hell is radio speech?
Learn how to be a DJ.
Oh, yeah, I took that too.
Spinning and grinning. Pounds of sound, stacks of wax.
Dude, Grease.
This was still, turntables where, yeah, you know, you're back winding mm-hmm. them in the cue mode. And I went, I'll take it. So Sam Raimi was in that class. And so we started doing morning announcements together, and that's how we got in the plays. I learned a very interesting political lesson in high school. I auditioned in 10th grade for the plays. I'm like, fuck you, man. I'm an actor. I'm going to be an actor. All I have to do is audition. I got this. I auditioned for like three plays in 10th grade. Nothing, nothing, nothing. They posted up on the door of the drama class. I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me, because I know I nailed that audition.
Were you popular?
And it wasn't so much that. I'm like, I'm as good as that other kid who can't even stand straight when he delivers his lines. The guy can't get his hands out of his pockets. I'm better than that guy. And so I had nothing. But then I realized it's because the guy, Jim Maul, who was the drama teacher. If you didn't have his class, you weren't getting in his plays, because he directed all the plays.
It's already political. It's already politics.
Bang! Yeah, the stardust in my eyes is already starting to drop away.
By the way, who was the guy with the hands in the pants? I remember his name.
He was a tall guy who would bounce. He would bounce back and forth every time he would talk, and he would never cut his hair. In the 1970s, you know, hair was down to your shoulders.
Yep.
But I'm playing a newspaper reporter from the 40s, so he would just slick his long hair back, and you go. John Page was his name.
John Page.
Yeah, so John, I got your number, buddy.
Fuck you, John.
Fuck you, John, who got that part. Can't even still stand still. So,
or it's a teacher.
Got into Jim Maul's class.
Jim Maul. In
11th grade in Lake Flint. I was in every play with Sam for 11th grade.
And Sam acted in these plays,
he
too.
Did. Sam was the funniest mother scratcher, still is to this day. Crazy, crazy humor, crazy, over the top.
And what would you guys do for fun? Like, what movies were you watching?
No, we did Super 8 movies. We never got in trouble on weekends because we were like, we got to shoot that, the reshoots from It's Murder. And then 6 months to Live, we have to do some more footage. We got very industrial. I think we did about 50 of these.
Do you think those were the best times of your life? Did you have the most fun?
Well, there weren't the job descriptions, because the sometimes disheartening thing is when you go up into the business and you get into the world of unions, now everybody has a very specific job that they do. And there's a lot less of the, how about this or how about that? There's not as much spitballing once you get up into the union levels. And I just thought that was always a little weird. You know, I was a production assistant for a couple of years before we made Evil Dead, and I'd work on these union shoots and commercials in Detroit. And I didn't know. I'd go to grab a cable, and this big burly guy would go,
can't do that.
I got that, buddy. I got that, buddy. But then I realized if you worked a 14-hour day, at the end of the day, they'd let you carry those. I go, need help with that dolly track? Yeah, I do, bud. Thanks a lot, man. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. You know, that's the only thing that I miss a little bit about it is the sort of spitballing where the lines were not as finely drawn of who did what. You know, everyone's little rice bowl has become very defined.
I think I was thinking more like pressure. when you're on a movie set with Sam Raimi and all these people and you're just...
Yeah, when you're spending money, it gets less fun. You know, these bean counters who run these studios, a lot of these guys should be fired because they're actually really lousy with money. They love to pride themselves in thinking that they are the smartest guys in the room. Isn't that their shtick? I'm Joe Businessman. I'm an excellent businessman. I'm tough, smart. I'm going to run a studio. Well, A, these guys, half of them don't even like movies. And if you don't like movies, you're not going to try and understand how to make them. So most of them don't even know, like on a film set, they wouldn't know what to say to anybody. You can tell anyone who's not a crew member or an actor, when they show up on a set, you can smell them. They smell agents. You can smell them a block before they get there.
Different. They're like, they
and they
belong.
Come on the set and they're in suits and ties and they're the most uncomfortable looking
yes,
people.
Yeah. Always.
Hands in pockets, nervously shifting. Don't know where to stand either. Oh, excuse me. Oh, sorry. Oh, hey, watch it, buddy. Hey, don't stand there. They're
it's
all
so
getting
true.
Shooed
it's
out of
absolutely
there.
True.
So these are the guys who are running the industry. And a friend of mine supplied walkie-talkies on Batman versus Superman that they
he
shot
supplied
in.
Supplied walkie-talkies.
Walkie-talkie rentals.
Okay.
Batman versus Superman, Pontiac, Michigan, a couple years ago, for the second unit. The second unit needed 200 walkie-talkies. This is guys pulling guys on wires and blowing shit up. You need 200 walkie-talkies and cell phones and iPads.
Right.
That are all programmed for production. All the numbers are all inputted. Great.
That's a lot of walkie-talkies.
It shows you the
waste.
The incredible waste. I want to sneak in. I'm going to disguise myself as a guy.
Hi, I'm from Harvard Business School. I'd like to try an economic experiment with Paramount Pictures. Would that be all right, sir?
Well, what do you want to do?
I'd like to take one of your $200 million movies and make 100 $2 million movies.
50 of them will suck. 25 of them will be mediocre. 10 will be good, and 2 of them are going to be classics that will pay for all the rest of them.
That's so true.
Why would you put all your eggs in one basket? And as a result, and I've seen this happen, the screening process and reshoots. I follow actors randomly, like Hugh Jackman. I don't know why. I just follow Hugh Jackman on Twitter. Seems to have a fun kind of life. And like he would tweet. He would tweet, We'll see if this is the last reshoot for
Wolverine.
And he's like bleary-eyed, a shot of him in the back of some van at 6 o'clock in the morning at some godforsaken location. Well, we'll see if this is the last reshoot. The reshooting. The reshoots drives me insane. I'm of the opinion that, you know what, dude? You had your shot. So now they're going to test it with unemployed people in Pasadena at a mall. And you're the fucking expert?
It's true, they do.
You're the expert? Yeah. You got nothing to do. So I'm going to listen to you of like, act three dragged a little bit. Or, you know, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Why is that guy so mean to her? You know?
He's not that likable.
I watched, there's a screening in Pasadena for the movie Darkman. Mm-hmm. I had just gotten divorced. I was broke, and Sam took pity on me and said, come on and work in the sound department. Because he knew I could kind of edit and do stuff. So I was working in the sound department, and we went to one of these screenings. So you screen it for 200 people in your multiplex. And then they keep a group of like 20 or 30 who have agreed to stay for a focus group. And they get these guys who are like, oh, what would they be? Psychiatrists.
Okay, we'd like to ask you some questions where we'd like to find out a little more about what you thought.
So one of the questions on the questionnaire was, which scene in the movie did you like the most and why? And another one was, which scene did you like the least and why? And one of the responses came back, the scene with the naked guy on the money. Okay, so in context, that's out of context. In context, it's Darkman. Darkman, played by Liam Neeson. He's dating Fran McDormand. He gets blown up in a lab experiment. We think he's dead. She's going to try and move on with life. She meets a very suave businessman, Colin Friels. You know, he's very charming and good looking, and he's a rich developer, and I'll show you the world, baby. So she starts to get wooed by this guy. And you go, okay, I guess she'll try and put her pieces of her life. Meanwhile, Dark Man is living in caves and trying to put his life back together. So the developer goes home to his very nice apartment and walks out of the room, and he's obviously just taking a shower. He's all glistening, and he's got a towel wrapped around his waist. Gets to the end of his bed, and he opens a box, and this gold shimmer falls across his face. And you look in the box, it's all these gold coins. And he takes these coins, and he pours them out onto the bed, covers the whole bed in gold Krugerrands. The camera cuts to behind. He drops his towel, buck-ass naked. He dives onto the bed and starts basically making love to the money. He's writhing in the money in ecstasy. Cut to the next day. He's in his office, completely composed, and Fran McDormand comes to visit him. And the way it works is you go, fuck, that guy's a sicko. And you're warning the audience. It's like, no, no, no.
Right.
You've given them some really dirty secret information on this guy. Like, you know, he kills little animals or whatever. In testing, everyone went, ooh, I'm so uncomfortable. And so it was the guy, naked guy with the money. Why? Because it made me feel uncomfortable. So instead of the studio saying to Sam Raimi, you nailed it. Everyone who saw that scene, it made him really uncomfortable. So they don't want Fran McDormand to wind up with that developer. He's a creep. That's the first scene they cut out. And I had told this executive at Universal, I told him repeatedly how it was my I'm so glad Sam had the balls to shoot that scene. It's my favorite scene in the movie. And after that testing, we're walking back through the parking lot. The executive goes, Bruce, I'll give you a copy of that scene because it ain't going in the movie. I'm like, you're a pussy.
He said that?
Yeah, you're a pussy. That's the best scene in the movie. You just cut the best scene in the movie out. Hope you're happy.
And that happens a lot.
Because you cut the edges off.
Yeah.
Because of the money. What if one little Billy in Iowa doesn't like the movie? So God forbid your movies are, you can make 10, 20 million more if it's PG-13.
And they're trying to outdo each other.
And the ratings thing is a big...
Rotten Tomatoes, don't get me started on that.
Well, but even beyond that, just the ratings thing, the ratings board, how you get a rating, how you get ratings and why you get ratings are ridiculous. And they're not standardized.
You see half breasts, you see a mole on a penis, it's everything.
Yeah, we're very confused in this country. The first Evil Dead had no rating. We did not submit it to the ratings board. Because, you know, you don't have to.
You don't.
No. But some radio stations will go, sorry, there's no rating. I don't know. This might be a snuff movie. And some newspapers and TV stations will not take the ad because the ratings give them a bogus comfort. So if you don't have a rating, so the first two Evil Dead movies were unrated. And so Army of Darkness rolls along, the third one. Universal makes it. It's now a studio movie. We're spending more. Contractually, we have to deliver an R rating. Oh, when they saw that it was us, the first two movies, you didn't seem to bother going through the ratings board. Oh, now you need a rating, do you? They gave Army of Darkness that has talking skeletons, okay? A 12-year-old would not be afraid of this movie. They gave it an NC-17.
Come on.
So we called them on it. We're like, bullshit. Tell us what to cut. They said, it's the cumulative effect. We were like, fuck you. Opening 5 minutes of Goodfellas. They're driving along. Thump, thump, thump. Hey, what's that fucking noise? They stop. They open up the trunk. There's a guy bound horribly against his will in the trunk. And he's already, they tried to kill him already. He's still alive for some miraculous reason. Joe Pesci takes a knife. Hey, fucking guy. He stabs him 15 times. That's torture. R-rated. Army of Darkness, you lop a head off, dust comes out. NC-17.
How much better would Army of Darkness have done if it wasn't an R rating? Exponentially better.
It wouldn't have done any better because they should have called it Evil Dead 3.
Yeah, why didn't they do that?
Because Universal, they don't think about stuff like that. It's not just them. It's a studio mentality.
These two little movies, Evil Dead, we don't know. No,
we got to call it something completely different so that, God forbid, the original fans would know what it is. We were going to call it The Medieval Dead.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Because that's what it was.
Yeah, hello. So anyway, I don't think ratings would have mattered a damn.
You know, very few people do a movie, their first film, and it becomes a cult movie and then gives them an incredible career after that.
Well, an incredible genre career, sure.
What do you mean a genre career?
It puts you, actors, wherever we wind up, you had only limited control over what you've done in the past. I have only had limited control. You see an opportunity, you take it. That one first movie took off over time. We sold it around the world. But so it's easy to work in horror movies. So I did, you know, Maniac Cop.
And, yep.
You know, no shortage of those. But I was perfectly fine with it because it kept my feet wet. It got me completely into the business. And it's only later where you go, well, let's try some other stuff here. You know, I'm an actor, not just like a guy with a chainsaw.
When was that moment where you were like, you know what? I want to do something different. I want to do something.
Probably I moved to Los Angeles from Michigan. And so it was time to get out and get an agent and see what you could get. So I got Knott's Landing was my first TV gig.
Yes.
And it was like, it was the last.
You should have left right
two
after
days
that.
Of
you
shooting.
Made it. You made it.
No. I thought it was really weird. I thought I auditioned for it. It was the first thing I auditioned with my brand new agent, and I got it. It was two lines. I was playing Michael York's assistant. I just had to look good in a suit. Okay.
I could do that.
I can do that. So I show up to shoot it, and I had just come from Evil Dead 2, directed by Sam, who was like, you know, 15 takes, 20 takes. Incredibly physical. Lots of great camaraderie. We'd run back, look at playback together. We'd kind of approve takes together.
Oh.
He was really great. It was like your best play pal. Of like, fuck, that was crazy. Wait, let's do one more thing.
How fun is
but
that?
Do the thing
I miss
thing.
That. Yeah. That it's, doesn't happen.
It's rare to have a director like that. And guys like Sam Raimi are one in 100,000. Most guys will go through the motions, men and women. We got a lot of good directors out there, but they're only good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sam is so far ahead of the curve. You know, I'm not sure how we got on this particular tangent, but Evil Dead 2.
When you're Knott's Landing.
Right, so I go from Evil Dead 2, this really good experience. It was one of the best of the Evil Dead shoots, kind of, you know, and it made money and it was good. And I went to get on the set of Knott's Landing, and Michelle Lee was the star of it. And boy, you've been on a show for a long time, and you know by the end, people are done. They're over it.
Yeah.
They are over it. And some actors just sort of dial out. Some, I'll just be in my trailer, give me a call. Some get angry. Some get belligerent. Some get sick. They can't handle it. You know, whatever. It's all of the above.
Yeah.
They were done with it.
Right.
So I get I'm a businessman. So I... They go, okay, we're going to get ready to shoot. Now they call me to set. I'm like, I'm supposed to be here. I'm running a meeting. I have no props. I have this ill-fitting suit.
Oh, boy.
And I go to the prop guy. Hey.
Can I have an attaché case?
Yeah, can I get like a briefcase and like a watch and like a ring, like a married guy? And the guy, he literally rolled his eyes.
You.
Hang on. And he shuffled away. It was the old MGM lot. You know,
made him work for the first time.
Oh, all these guys were like 97
done.
Years old. They were so over it. So finally, a guy gives me this shitty briefcase, like a pen, you know, and a thing, a crappy watch. And so we shoot it. I go into makeup, and the guy goes, he looks at me, he goes, you know, if I pluck between your eyebrows, you'll look much more intelligent. I'm like, yeah, okay. I got home. My wife was like, wow, you look pretty. She goes, I've never seen more makeup on any human being in my life. Because they hit you with these horrible late 80s lighting.
Oh, yeah.
It's the worst lighting ever. 82 shadows across your face. I don't know what these guys were thinking. You know, now shows look beautiful. What the fuck was your problem in the 80s?
Did you hate it? Did you hate Knott's Landing?
I hated the experience.
Sure.
Because here's what would happen. After the very first take, it was a master wide shot, talk, ready, and cut. Michelle Lee looks right to the camera operator, not the director or the writer, goes, Jimmy, good for you. Jimmy gives a thumbs up, bang, moving on, let's go. So if the camera guy was fine with it, it's fine.
They didn't need a director, in other words.
Oh, the guy was there.
There was just no respect.
None.
That's just awful.
I'm like,
that's
all. I didn't do
I've
TV for 5 years.
That's just disheartening.
After that,
yeah.
I went, this is the stupidest job ever.
Did you ever have a bad experience with the director?
Just recently, I will admit, is the first time I've ever told a guy he couldn't no longer direct me.
This happened recently.
Yeah.
Was it on something that you film overseas?
No.
You don't want to talk about it?
No.
But you told him he couldn't direct you anymore.
Yep. You don't have my back. It was after one day of shooting, and I was a producer, so I could do this. And that's why you should become a producer. Because if someone doesn't have your back, you got your own back.
What made you think that you were, he didn't have your back? What was it that you felt that?
Everything he thought was funny, I thought was terrible. Everything I thought was funny, he was just not interested in. He was not interested in new ideas. He wasn't interested, didn't really have a plan of how to shoot something or block it or lay it out.
Cocky?
Yes, as a matter of fact, which was part of the problem.
Yeah, because
I'm like,
see?
You don't know enough to be cocky. I put up with one day of that, and he was blocking on set, and I said, let's have a little chitty chat. I said, you know, why don't you be responsible for the scene and telling the story and putting these scenes together and blocking, and I'll take care of everything that comes out of his mouth, what he says and how he says it, and where I am and what I do. So don't you worry about that. I got me covered. You got plenty to do.
So you do that, and you're going about your day. Does this work, or is there a moment where he goes, Bruce, can I just ask you to do one thing? Bruce?
No, if you want to chime in and actually participate in the process, I'm very happy to listen to all of your ideas. There was another guy, another instance. I went, he's never going to give me a single note. Not a single note after a single take. So I went, well, then let's just save a lot of time. Let's roll the take, and we'll do two on a roll without stopping, and then that'll be it.
And that was it?
Yeah. And so I said to the first AD, so that's our new plan. I'm just going to roll it twice because I'm not going to hear anything. Nothing's going to happen, so let me just do two. I'll have a pretty good sense of whether it works, and we'll move on. So I've had to, and it's not of any great pleasure at all to do that.
No.
It was a very difficult thing, and they did not take it well. And I get that, but I'm like, I said to the one guy, I don't know how you got this gig.
You said that to him?
Yeah.
He goes,
man, that was harsh. I'm like, I'm telling you like it is, pal. What are you bringing to this party?
Jesus.
Yeah, what are you bringing?
There's been a couple of moments in my life.
And I'm not proud of any of it. I've also gone off on a guy who, it was for safety issues. You know, a guy blew off a squib right as I'm running through the door. The squib was at eye level, and it was supposed to go off after I cleared the door jamb.
Could have gotten blind.
Guy blew it off, so I turned around. I'm like, who gave the cue? And the director goes, I did. I go, well, then you can't anymore. You've lost that. You clearly don't have any sense of safety. That was my eye. It blew off at eye level.
Jeez.
I could be blind, motherfucker. So you don't get to make that call anymore. The effects guy's going to make
it. It's amazing
call.
How a moment like that could really just change your mood and temper and just the way you feel. For
oh,
the
you
rest
get
of
clarity,
the-
man. You get clarity real quick because you go, it's not worth losing an eye
no,
for this entertainment.
Yes.
This is make-believe. This is not worth this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a buddy of mine on Burn Notice, Jeffrey Donovan, star of the show, he's across from a guy who's going to be killed in front of him. He's being assassinated in front of Jeffrey Donovan. So a squib, he gets shot in the back, and a squib comes out the front of him. A squib meaning the explosive charge that'll spew blood out. That's an actual charge that they're blowing. You know, so there's wadding. So they lined up. He's right across from the guy. They needed to stagger each other so that the ballistics would blow out and not go right at our star. They just didn't set it up right. Bang, the thing went off. Jeffrey whips his head around. This thing hit him right, a wadding hit him right in the upper lip. And it swelled up to the size of a golf ball. And they had one more scene to shoot of him on the phone. He stuck the phone and just put it over his mouth for the whole scene.
Holy
if
shit.
If that was his eye, it would have been gone.
That's it.
Yeah. In the blink of an eye. So
do it.
Have you seen the footage from that Uma Thurman got?
No,
hurt
I did not actually.
In a car
I want
crash.
To watch that.
Here's the key aspect to it.
Right.
He goes, you got to do it. You got to do it. You got to do it. No, I don't want to do it. Don't want to do it. You got to do it. You got to do it. Because it's you. The shot is directly behind her head, and her hair is flowing directly to the lens. It could have been my grandmother in a wig. You never saw an inkling of her face. It was dead straight behind. There was no reason at all for her to have been
in that
vehicle.
That situation.
So part of it is hubris. Part of it is ignorance. And part of it is, you know, he probably needed to learn that lesson. You can't just make actors randomly do stuff. And now the good news is, you know, they've instituted tons of new rules in New Zealand for safety, workplace safety. We get briefings every morning. And, you know, it's a good thing. It just keeps everybody, because now what it is if you see something weird, you raise your hand and you say it. And well, nobody gives you the stink eye anymore. Right. No. Because we were about to do a fire gag. And I don't know about you, I don't like fire.
No.
And I don't like fire gags, because even though it's behind you 15 feet, but you hear that of the gas going up and you feel it all on your back.
Yeah, yeah. It's uncomfortable.
And I went to the safety guy. I go, I need you to get some orange tape and tape me a route out of here. Which way am I going in case this shit behind me goes south?
Smart.
Where am I going? And no question about it, built a beautiful route, moved a bunch of shit out of the way. I'm like, okay, now I'm ready to do a fire scene. I also said this, this show now, I am not shooting a live gun. On the entire series of Ash vs. Evil Dead, I jerk my arm, and I got a guy on set, he's one of the electricians. The first AD cues it, ready, and bang. And so I know I'm jerking on bang. The lighting guy, he and I are in such good sync. He got it. He knows when I would pause.
He knows when you're jerking.
He knows when I'm jerking. And he'll get it right. And he'll do a sort of a golden-y flash.
Oh, okay.
From the gun. You put the digital thing, you put a howitzer cannon over it, and you have a very wicked, you have a wicked shotgun with no safety issues whatsoever. Because if you have a live gun on set now, and even years ago, you'd come in, a guy would he'd shine a light through the barrel. Yeah, well. And this is every time you gave it away to the guy. He'd come back and have
nothing
to
in
do
there.
This dance. Yeah, is that clear? You good, Bruce? Clear over here. It's like I'm working at, you know, Pep Boys, Bay 1, Bay 2. Good Bay 1. Thank you, Bay 2. And it became a really Magilla. And I don't like the noise, and I don't like the safety.
Yeah.
So we told that to Stars, and they were like, hip, 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 hip. They kerfuffled a bit until they saw the whole finished thing. And it's fakery, folks. Yeah. It looks beautiful. Because now, you know, in the old days, you'd fire a squib. The charge would come out of the gun, and you'd have to watch the playback to make sure in playback you did not see the flash. If you saw the flash, it meant the shutter was closed. Yeah. Ridiculous.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
There's none of that now. Now you go, how far would we like the flash to be? You make this beautiful orange flash to come out, you know?
Now you're seeing all this now and technology. But back then, when you're doing Evil Dead and all these movies, you're beating the shit out of yourself. I remember watching, I'm like, when you're smashing these dishes on your head, yeah, you had to have been hurt.
Yeah,
you had to have hurt yourself.
Of course. Now we get shooting the first Evil Dead. Ash whips around, thinks he sees something outside the window, takes a shotgun and blows the window out. So we take the shotgun, put a shell in it. Camera guy's outside. Tim Philo. Tim, where are you? He waves his hand. I'm like, I don't know. I wouldn't be there. This is what it was.
Come on.
I wouldn't be there.
I wouldn't be there.
What if I, okay, I'll turn it on and I'll get out of the way, but I want to be near just to sort of check. I go, I'd be there. And so action, turn, wheel, boom, blam. Just shoot the shit out of a window. See what happens. And he blows, sure, looks great. Blows shit out of a window. Later, Ash has got some deadite that's running away from him. He's going to shoot the thing from behind and like blow a chunk out of its shoulder. He went to the butcher, got a big hunk of like roast. I think it was like a big pot roast. Taped it to this dummy in Sam's garage. Took a shotgun and just fucking blew the thing off the shoulder in Sam's garage. A shotgun blast in his garage, you know, and his parents are like, what's happening? It's like, it's okay, Mom. It's just killing deadites.
Come on.
Crazy. Just a gun. Just take a shotgun and just shoot it. Stupid stuff.
What's your favorite scene? Let's just say your top favorite, two favorite scenes in all the Evil Dead movies. The one thing where you're like, this is fucking good.
It was the part that Dino De Laurentiis didn't want in Evil Dead 2.
Which was?
There's 20 minutes in the movie where it's just me. There's nobody else in the movie for 20 minutes, for two reels. And Dino got extremely nervous. He goes, Sam, you can't have one guy in a movie for 20 minutes. People, they fucking go crazy. They'll die. They'll commit suicide. Like, he just could not imagine that being possible to pull off. And to me, it's the best part of the movie.
It is.
And I'm trying not to be dickish about it. It's a bold thing for a filmmaker to do. Put your lead guy and torture him for 20 minutes solid, going through one ridiculous thing after
another. Before the others get there.
Yeah. And by the time they get there, he's completely whacked out of his gourd. They think he's a horrible killer. And he wanted to cut that way down. He didn't want any.
What's your favorite line?
I don't know. You know, we made a bunch of them up.
Did you? What was the most famous line? Groovy's probably one of the famous lines, but did you make that up?
We were ready to shoot a scene with Ash and Beth Davids, who played Sheila in Army of Darkness. And Sam's nowhere to be found. We're like, oh God, can somebody find Sam?
Let's playing shoot with dolls.
He's dressed as fucking Sherlock Holmes. So let's shoot this shot. Come on, where is he? And we hear him giggling over in the corner. And he comes over and he's still giggling. He goes, I know what you're going to say to her. I go, what? I'm not supposed to say anything. I just kissed her. He goes, no. No.
First you
you're going to look her. First you're going to go. You're going to say to her, give me some sugar, baby. I was like, I'm supposed to say, give me some sugar, baby? He goes, yeah. It's going to be great. I go, this is the stupidest line I've ever heard. He goes, shut up. You're going to say it. Then he got pissed, you know, like, you say that line. I'm like, okay. So I know that line ultimately had power, give me some sugar, baby. I was at a signing, and a guy came up, and he goes, thanks for give me some sugar, baby. Thanks for that line.
Wow.
I go, why? He goes, I was working in China, in Beijing, and I had it translated into Mandarin. I went into a bar, used it on a Chinese chick, and got laid. Give me some sugar, baby.
You know what my favorite line is?
What?
I think it's Evil Dead 2, when you're looking in the mirror, and you say,
oh, you cut up your girlfriend with a chainsaw. Does that sound fine?
That's fucking the best. Now, did he write that? Was that written?
Sam probably wrote half of it, but then as we got going, well, Sam, crazy director that he is, he'd throw new lines during the take.
He just thought you were funny. He knew how funny you were, and he let you do
it. It wasn't that. I think he realized, let's manipulate this while we're making this piece of clay. Army of Darkness, he'd keep the camera rolling, and he'd go, okay, now you're going to say this. And he'd give me a paragraph.
And you can remember a paragraph?
Well, no, in the dailies, here it is. All right, you old man, listen here. Here's what's going to happen. See, now spin his chin, listen up, and listen good. So I would be listening in the dailies. You'd see me listening and listening. And then I'd pause going, because I'd have to say it in my head once at least. And then I'd look at the guy, and then I would say it, and I'd get fucked most of it. So I'd go, wait a minute. What was it again? Yeah, come on. You see, you old Spanish shit, listen to me. So he'd correct me again. I'd wait. So that's what a lot of the dailies were, was him trying new lines, like right at the moment. And why not?
Why not?
He did Darkman. He did one of the craziest things I've ever seen, because I went to, you know, you visit your buddy on a film set. He was making this movie for Universal. It was kind of a big deal. I went to visit him. He's got a 60-foot dolly track set up. It's a pretty good run of dolly track.
Sure.
And all this crap is happening with all these actors, and there's a lot of rigmarole, and this thing is tracking. Gets all the way to the end, and Sam goes, reset back to one! Like me, don't cut. So the grip's like, oh, shit. So they push the thing all the way back 60 feet. The hair people would come in to do stuff. Sam would go, get out of my shot! As long as the camera was rolling, he owned that shot. Because his biggest complaint was, as soon as you call cut,
everybody's coming in to fix things.
Now you're herding cats. Half the people walk away.
Right.
And too many people come in. Get out of my fucking
shot. Keep rolling.
So he goes, film is the cheapest commodity. So he'd redo a 60. And now, energy-wise, the actors are going, oh, fuck. Okay. All right, get ready. Back around, reset. And so their energies, they're spiking in energy because they're like, oh, shit, okay. And they button their jacket up again. They'd fix their own hair.
They all do it themselves. That's what we do.
Absolutely. And they know what they have to
do. I love that.
They know what they have to do.
Yes.
And I know what I need to fix. Yes. Sam's shouting out, do the thing with the ba-ba. Do another take. Back to one on a roll. I mean, these guys.
No time to think. Just do it.
Nothing. And, you know, a lot of editors had a lot of extra work finding shit. So you'd have three takes on one.
Sure.
On one slate. He pioneered a lot of weird methods. Sam, he had a whole sequence in Evil Dead where it was, Ash is going crazy, and it's another good sequence in the original movie. I'm going to shoot the whole sequence at a 45-degree tilt.
Oh, yeah.
Visually today, it just makes it look like a modern movie. But I remember at the time we were sitting around a table at this crappy rented house in Morristown, Tennessee, going, you want to shoot the whole sequence? Like at 45 degrees? And he's like, yeah. I mean, he stayed up all night, like drawing these crazy storyboards.
Unbelievable.
And so we were like, let's go. And it visually, it doesn't even look weird. It right where it was in the movie, you kind of go, yeah, everything's a little cockeyed right now.
Right.
Everything's cockeyed. And he used his former magician background. He loves sleight of hand stuff. He's got a thing where a creature's supposed to levitate. And we have $12 to make this movie. You're not, there's no stunt rigging. There's another crap. So the actress was Ellen Sandweiss. We called it the elevator. She sat on a seat sort of between her legs from behind. And then she was strapped in to a seesaw. So two guys, and it went, so the camera was straight in front of her. And she was standing in front of a window. And so the rig went back out through the window.
Right.
But where the camera was, you couldn't see that she was attached to anything. And it's two guys with a 20-foot pole.
Just pushing on down.
They pushed down and up she goes.
I remember, yeah.
And then they could wiggle her a little bit side to side. No wires, no nothing. It cost $1.
Unbelievable.
You know, so he used a lot of his just magician skills. He was we used to do bar mitzvahs, me and Sam. And that's where he realized hurting me in front of people works. And they laugh, and so he knows that works. Because I was his assistant, Hung Low. We wore, like, lab coats. And every time he would ask me
Hung
to do
something.
Hung Low, yeah. Every time I would do something for him, he'd take, a riding crop and hit me. And all the kids thought that was just
loved
the
it.
Funniest thing ever. And so a big light bulb over Sam of, like, Bruce plus pain equals gold.
Do you guys – we're going to go because we're going to go out to dinner. I'm taking you to this
we
restaurant.
We are.
By the way, Rob, you've never seen the Evil Dead movies, have you? Briscoe County Jr., Bubba Hotep, the list goes on. Mission Control that we were in never aired.
I've seen some of Ash vs. Evil Dead on Stars, though.
Yeah, pretty radical.
Mm-hmm.
Do you and Sam ever go, we got one left in us down the road, something big that we want to work on, something like me and you, like old times, something, come on, I can see it in your face, I can see it.
It's sort of, I think we know enough that it's okay. We've done it. We did a lot of stuff together, you know. And
you've done everything together.
He's got 47 kids, and you know that's the only downside of what we do is that these jerks run off and start families, and then it's hard to see. You know, it's hard to see each other. It really is, and it's nothing out of malice. It's just you don't have time.
Well, you moved.
Anymore.
You're gone.
I can't even go
stone smoked riding bikes with you.
Yeah, I took off to Oregon. I finally got him up. I got Sam and two of his pasty city kids up.
Did they love it?
Oh, they were injuring themselves every single day, and it was hilarious. The one kid, he turned at one point, goes, "Do you just hurt yourself every day living in the country?"
And you're like, "Shut up, Hung Low."
We're like, "Yeah, if you don't watch where you're going and trip over that root, you know." I took him to see the Bigfoot trap.
I don't know that.
We have a Bigfoot trap built by the Forest Service in the frickin' 70s about a half an hour from where I live in Oregon.
And what is the Bigfoot
trap? It was built to catch Bigfoot. It was a trap. It was an elevated trap with springs.
And it's still there.
It was like an elevator. It was like an express elevator, like a freight elevator in the woods.
An elevator, right.
And Bigfoot presumably would go, "Oh, look, some peanut butter. That looks good. I'll step onto this platform that has nothing to do with nature." And then by stepping on it would lower it and the gates would close. And now it's just a shadow of its former self. But the fact that our government built a Bigfoot trap is just so astounding.
I want to come visit.
You should. Come up. We'll do part two from my balcony.
I would like that. I think that would be fun. I think we'd have a good time.
Well, then we could talk about issues like land management.
I don't know much about land management.
I'll share what I know another time.
Do you have one of those big bells to make sure everybody in your family is back home at a certain time?
No, I have a BB gun. I just shoot them.
Shoot them right in the Irish?
Yeah.
What's your handle on the Twitter?
@ Groovy Bruce.
You always seem to tweet me and make fun of me.
It's important to do that because you run around stoned with your friends singing silly Christmas songs.
I do.
Yeah. And I totally appreciate that. Yeah. But you're setting yourself up for ridicule.
I love
course.
It. I love ridicule.
Yeah.
I feel you just got to look stupid. It's just...
I troll Tom Hanks, too.
Do you?
Hanks is always looking down. He takes pictures of shit on sidewalks.
Does he respond to you?
Oh, no.
Not like I do.
Oh, no.
It's Thomas Hanks.
No, Mr. Tom Hanks.
That's Mr. Thumb.
Tom Hanks, America's favorite actor.
And your book, bestseller, it's...
Hail to the Chin, The Further Confessions of a B-Movie Actor. Chronicles pretty much from 2001 until now.
It's well worth the read.
There's lots of pictures, too. Ain't going to take you long.
It's great.
The audio version, if you got a shitty commute.
Ooh.
That's out.
How long is the audio version?
6 hours.
That's actually pretty great.
A broad dynamite.
And it's you narrating.
Yeah, you got to. If it's your stinking book, you got. And if you're a bogus actor, you got to read it.
Maybe I'll write a book.
Everybody's got a book, dog. Everybody's got a book. Write it, because you'll have a good one.
I have some dark shit.
But then you got to decide. Yeah, well, you got to decide.
Who's going to help me?
You don't necessarily need help. Not for your first one. You slug it out the first time.
Really?
Yeah. There I was on the set. My bald apparatus was coming off in the heat.
I shaved my head.
It was a 4-3 shoot. I didn't want to be there anymore. My contract was up. I said, no, I quit.
I couldn't stare at that good-looking Superman for one more day. I looked at myself with the nicks and bruises on my...
Yeah, so
thank you for allowing me to be inside of you, Bruce
Campbell. Well, you felt good inside of me.
This was great. Let's go have some food. Rob,
let's.
Thanks.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.